Okay. Yeah.
Hi, Jewish mom. I'm so honored tonight to be in the home of Sukal Pai, the mother of Ozzy, a blessed memory, the father of a today was actually when we planned the interview. I didn't realize this, but today was actually, or in America is still, his 14th birthday, So I just wanted to first of all say my own personal. I feel like a very deep connection with this, with Sukal Pai, with her son. The truth is that, you know, maybe two or three weeks ago I posted like parts of an interview with Sukal Pai, which she did with Esti Yarmish, which was amazing. But then I decided for myself I had to meet you, which is why I'm doing an additional interview on my own, because I just wanted to just come to Harnoff and meet you. I felt like I had to meet this person. So just my own personal connection, the night of the tragedy in Lag Ba'Omer in Maron, it was early the next morning, and I got on my neighborhood WhatsApp list, someone forwarded a WhatsApp that Sue had written with a picture of her son looking so, he just looked so adorable with such a huge smile. And she wrote, "Has anyone seen my son? I assume he fell asleep on a bus somewhere, or he's curled up somewhere in a corner somewhere in like some kind of, I don't know." Later on, when I saw that boy, when I saw Ozzy's picture on, you know, among the 45 Kedoshim who died in Meron, I, like, that was what really made it real for me. The dimensions of the catastrophe and the tragedy which had taken place. So today, it's really powerful that this is after, you know, that it would have been his 14th birthday. I have been blown away by the stories that I've heard about Ozzy, and I want to hear about him. But first of all, I want to hear about you, Sukal Pai. If you can tell me a little bit, like, who are you? Where are you from?
So, my husband and I are both from California, and we are Bala Tshuva in California. We got married and moved straight away to New York City. We stayed there for 3 years, and then we moved to Israel. We were Zapata. We moved here with one son, and then we had two more in the 4 years we were Zapata B in Israel. And then because of our parent situation, we needed to move back to America. We were there for 16 years in Pasaic, which was a beautiful, beautiful community. Mm-hmm. And then 8 years ago, we were given permission to come back to Israel, where my son is.
You need permission by your rabbi, like you're consulting your rabbi.
Yeah, consulting a lot of people to make sure that it fit every single child and it fit the family. And every year we asked and waited until it was the right fit so that everyone would be successful as far as we could do. And two of my kids stayed behind, but they came later on. And my son, Ozzy, was our youngest, and he was going to Kit Aleph. So he spent all of his learning time in Israel.
So you were talking about Ozzy before we were on the video, on live. And you were telling me such incredible stories about Ozzy. Also in the interview I saw, if you can share, there was this phenomenal story that you told about how he would do cheshbon, that after he passed away, you found another, he did cheshbon nefesh every single...
I actually have one of the papers he did, that he, we did, you know, all little boys have little crumpled up pieces of paper in the nightstand, and every, you know, every Pesach when it was time to clean his room, I would have them clean. And I'd see all these papers, but I did open them, and he would decide what he kept and what he didn't keep. And, you know, some of them he threw away, some of them he kept. And then after it was Niftar, my older son went through the nightstand, and he opened up the papers, and he saw that they were all cheshbonos. They were all cheshbon on his davening and on his learning, and he had where he davened, and he graded himself every day on how he did. And if
can we show it? Can we show it to the camera so people can see?
It's kind of hard to see, but they're just schedules. They're just, you know, schedules. We have a bunch of them. And we found the one that was in his jacket when he was Nifter. There was a one that had a brand new schedule.
Wow.
Just, you know, a couple days old. And
he was 13 years old, right?
Yeah, he was 13. Wow. But the brand new one, you could see his writing was different. You could see his writing was more mature, more refined. And he had on, you know, he used to keep track of whatever Masechta Gemara he was learning, how many dafim there were, so how many days it would take to do it, and a schedule if he did his chazar that he was supposed to do it for himself. And yes, we found those all after years after. No one knew. His rebbe didn't know. His friends didn't know. None of us knew. It was very, very private.
Wow.
It was just his schedule for himself on what he was doing. It wasn't for anybody else.
Wow. So can you tell everyone the story about the fish? There's this beautiful fish tank here. Sue, before we went live, was telling me an incredible story about the fish.
So I think some people have heard this story. You should probably show the fish tank. So we had, you know, as many people do, a small little tiny fish tank with, you know, one or two goldfish. And after a couple of years, we got sick of cleaning the fish tank. So we went to the fish store, we got a little tiny cleaner fish. I think it's called a catfish, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And after the, you know, a couple of years, it grew and grew and grew and grew until it was this old. We need a bigger fish tank because it's our Baal Chaim. The fish is not happy. I said, you know, sweetie, we don't need a new fish tank. And I put him up and put him up and put him up. And he really could use a bigger fish tank. It's not next to the fish. So I went to a couple of fish stores and they were very, very expensive. I couldn't rationalize buying this enormous fish tank for these little goldfish. And then a few weeks ago, I guess 3 months ago maybe, someone down the street advertised that they were selling a bunch of furniture and they were also selling a fish tank for a very good price. So I went over and saw it and I thought it was perfect. So I arranged with my son, went over there, and there was still the fish inside because the father was out learning. And as he very carefully took a fish out, he carefully took all the pills for it. All the kids were around him, and he described what he was doing to the little kids, and the wife was amazed at the patience
and
the thought and the care that he put into his fish. So we packed up everything, we brought it down the street, and we put it all together, and he was, you know, he spent a good hour putting it together, making sure all the fish were good, and he got colored pieces of paper and wrote down how many of each fish there were, so he could keep track that they were all safe. And that whole week, he came home every day to make sure, because sometimes the oxygen wasn't good or the heater wasn't good, and he would race home to check to make sure it was good. But the fish tank was pretty empty, and he said, the fish are not happy yet. They're bored. So I didn't know fish could be bored. But when he was doing a big home visit for his Rebbe, I went and found a fish store. And the next morning, I brought my husband, and we bought this enormous coral thing, and when my son came home from Cheder, we opened it, had no directions, and we said, okay, can you put this together? So he put it together, and he so carefully put it in, made sure every single fish was happy.
Kind of
getting
shows, everyone can see what we're talking about. Yeah.
And so now it had this enormous coral thing going on, and all these beautiful rainbow fish going on, and he stood back, and he said, Mommy, now my fish are happy. And an hour later, he left for Marone. It was Aaron Black Bowman. And then, should I tell the rest of the story?
Can you tell the story about the
papers? He put colored papers that had the numbers of every single fish.
Right, right.
So that we could keep track.
Yeah.
So we still have those colored papers to keep track of all the fish.
Wow, wow. What I think is just remarkable about this story is just that his care. I mean, I cannot believe that he was 13 years old. Like these stories of like how he did this cheshbon nefesh every day. It's just that. That the stories that I've heard about his caring, and even his caring about the fish, like how he was so
from the plants.
Yeah.
He grew a lot of plants and ran home every day to make sure his plants were okay.
Wow.
He cared. He cared about everything that was in front of him. Whatever situation he was in, wherever Hashem put him, that's what he focused on.
And you were saying that at the Shiva, that you got all sorts of surprising visitors.
Amazing visitors. I mean, the most amazing that we spread the story is three street cleaners came, I think it was three, in their uniforms, and they dove in chakras with us, and afterwards they asked to speak with us, and they said, now we know who your son is. We never knew his name, we didn't know who he was or where he lived, but every day he would say to us, thank you so much for cleaning up our city. And he would tell me once a week, he would say, thank you, Maryland, for making our beautiful city clean. And he was so happy.
At home, he would say, Maryland,
we're so happy. When he was on the street, he would tell the street owners, thank you for cleaning the house. He would say, thank you for cleaning the streets. You did have a special job.
Wow.
And we had the dry cleaners and the plumber and the electrician and the orthodontist and the florist and the kablan, and the Arab workers refused to work the first day when he was nifter because he was the only child in 30 years that they had let near him. Because when he was 7, they did construction, and he was so sweet. He would, the kablan was from
a contractor.
He was from Guyan, and my son would get dressed so fast every morning because the contractor came between 7 and 7:30, so Ozzy was ready every day at 7, even though that's when everybody else woke up. And he was ready, and every day he would come in, he would wait at the door for the contractor, because every day the contractor would give him a durator. And he would get his durator, and we'd have some breakfast, and then he'd race around to find out what they were doing, if he could help. And he would ask them, what are you doing today? And he would, you know, just nicely ask them, and nicely give them whatever, you know, tools they needed, or water, or coffee. Yeah. And they loved having him around. So he was the only child they ever had around.
This is when he was how old?
He was 7. So when they found out that he was nifter, they refused to work there. They were so upset.
Wow.
Because he was so kind.
Wow.
And he didn't do anything miraculous.
And it had been it was already 6 years later.
Yeah. I remember him. So all the people came in and said, your son just had a special way of being. It was more than just smiling. It was the kavana. It was being kind, and it was being respectful. And you were at Selma O'Keefe, and you know, these are lessons I think as parents we teach our kids. We teach our kids to say thank you. We teach our kids that everyone's at Selma O'Keefe. And he took that lesson. And he didn't question it. And you know, it was something that he had throughout his, you know, they say needles don't split. So at school the rabbi would teach him, a gadol does this. You know, he would mention a gadol does this. Like Rav Kanievsky wears long shirts. So Ozzy came home and said, okay, I need to wear long shirts. Mm-hmm. See, you're 11 or 12. You don't have to wear long shirts.
Yeah.
He does. So I asked the Rav. I just happened that day to be in the car with the Rav, and I said, my son said his Rav said, you need to wear long shirts. I said, wear long shirts. Let him wear long shirts.
Yeah.
And I said, can you please just keep 3 short sleeve shirts for summer? He said, for you, I'll keep them. Mm-hmm. I promise I'll wear them.
Wow.
And that was it. He wore long shirts. But it was that. He took something on with such clarity and such simcha and no doubt.
Wow.
This is what I've got all done, so this is what I'm going to do. There's no question.
Wow.
And, you know, I think my husband and my kids, we sat at Shiva saying, why was he always so happy? And one thing that occurred to us, we don't know if it's true, that he didn't have doubts. He didn't question. He just did it. So, and he always did it right. So there was no regret. There was no baggage. There was no, you know, I could have, I should have, I didn't, should I? He just did it.
Wow.
You know, we sat together and thought, you know, is there a special yontif? Like, we're thinking, what can we do for his legacy? Is there a special yontif? This is going to be it. And we said, no. Every yontif was as joyful as the last. He looked forward to every single yontif.
Wow.
He had so many menorahs for Hanukkah. They were on the whole table.
Yeah.
And in sukkahs, he not only built our sukkah, but he would build upstairs sukkah. He would take his toolkit and build anyone's sukkah that needed help.
Wow.
For Purim, he, you know, made sure he could make as many bags as possible so he could give everybody he could find. And for Pesach, the day after Pesach, he would go with his brother-in-law, and they would go pick wheat in the fields. And since he was little, he did this. He would pick wheat, and they would thresh it, and they would do all the steps. They would get the water, and they would grind, and they would make matzah in the factory.
Wow.
And, you know, this
out of the wheat that they had grounded.
They ground. And this was the first year he was so excited because he could finally do everything himself.
Wow.
So his bar mitzvah, his bar mitzvah, he could finally bake the matzah, he could be part of the matzah baking because he was finally bar mitzvah.
Wow.
But every yantar was exciting for him.
Wow.
He took it very, very seriously.
Wow. So I wanted to ask you about current events You had said a few weeks ago in your interview, you had said that the rabbi had told you.
So at the Shoshim, right? At the Shoshim, one of our rabbis, Rabbi Schwartz, said it was so interesting to him that if you looked at a bunch of different events, and my daughter noticed that it was in 2-week intervals, that Lag BaOmer was nafal, people fell, which was highly unusual. And 2 weeks later, it was Carlin Stolen at Shavuos, and the punches fell, and people fell. And 2 weeks later, there was an Italian cable car that had 3 generations of Yidden, and that fell. And then 2 weeks later was Miami, where the building fell. And, you know, the rabbi, he looked at it as something is falling and we need to rise up. And I took it that I had learned from Rabbi Itamar Schwartz through different friends and Rebbetzins in the community that it was from the earth. And the earth means, you know, the world is built on the 4 elements, earth, air, fire, and water. And the months, the Hebrew months go in order. If you look at every month, the symbol is either earth, air, fire, or water. So are the parshas. And if you look at yourself, you have all 4 elements, but 1 element is going to be the strongest. And so each element has this positive side and this negative side. And if you can figure out what your biggest strength is, and you can figure out which side are you on, you can figure out, okay, where's my tikkun, what do I need to do? So the negative side of earth is, or let's start with the positive. The positive side is strength and steadfast, musr, clarity, focus, tradition, stability, and that's all great. You need that. You need the stability. You need the musr. You need the musorah. But the negative side is being stuck and being lazy and narrow and inertia. And so if all these things are falling, it seems to me like the answer is to rise, the answer is to move. So the answer for us is to do those small acts, like the small movement. The first law of physics is an object in motion will stay in motion. So if you can pick something very, very, very tiny and just get the ball rolling. And if you get that ball rolling, Hashem puts you on your way. It says, the way you want to go, that is where you'll be led. It also says if you try to grab something big, you'll grab nothing. If you grab something small, then you'll have a lot. You'll have that something. So if you take something super small and start moving, maybe as Klal Yisrael, we can get up and move together and get out of this falling to earth stage and rise and move on together.
I just want to say to everyone listening, so you can write in your questions in the chat, and we'll take a few minutes at the end to answer questions. I think that, you know, now we've lived in such huge tragedies in Meron, and, you know, now this in Surfside, and just, I think that, you know, I hear we were talking before about the micro mitzvah, that you're passionate about, that this is your mission, is to spread this idea of the micro mitzvah. And I think I just want to like sharpen this point with you because I think that I hear about the micro mitzvah. I think, oh my God, like, so the fact that I do, today I was walking along a walk and I saw a popsicle wrapper. And I thought, okay, that's the micro mitzvah. And I pick up the popsicle wrapper. But then you think, you feel kind of ridiculous, you know, that you're doing something so teensy.
Yeah, but if you can imagine with micro mitzvah, which we are pushing on our new foundation. We have a foundation called the AziFoundation.org.
AziFoundation.org.
And we're pushing micro mitzvah on there. And if every single yid did something tiny, and you do it old ideas, you have the kavana, you have the kavana, you have the simcha, you do that act, and you not only do it today, you do it tomorrow, you do it the next day, it's going to build you. And not only that, can you imagine if every single yid picked up a popsicle wrapper, there'd be no trash.
Yeah.
Or something would be no trash if everyone did a tiny, tiny act. Mm-hmm. If everyone smiled at one person a day, can you imagine how many neshamas would be lifted from
it? Yeah.
Or if everyone did one bracha with real kavana, something very, very small, because it will lead to bigger change. You just have to start small.
So what's your micro mitzvah?
I have a bunch. I'll name a couple. I think the most striking for me was when the morning after my son was nifter, I was saying a Shayat Zara, and I learned from Rabbi Rucham that you stand with your feet together and you say the bracha. And the idea is the part of the bracha says "Lifnei Kiseifa Kedoshecha," which means in front of the crown of your glory, the throne, the throne of your glory. And I realized that my son is by the Kisei Kavod. Mm-hmm. So I said that bracha really slowly. And now I say it with such kavana and so slowly, and I'm so hopeful that my son is at the Kisei Kavod, and he's learning, and he's growing, and he's fighting for us. Another one I have is I daven now. I changed my daven. I used to daven in the living room, but I feel like this is more my son's space, and now I daven in here. And I took on a tehillim. There's a tehillim on 119, Kofitet, which I learned with one of my daughters, and I say that every day for my son. And to me, it encompasses that tehillim encompasses all of Torah. You know, they say that Rabbis say that Kofitet encompasses all Torah, encompasses all of our milestones in life. And one of the pesukim is actually in this matzeva. And so it has a special meaning for me. And I feel like that's my time. If I'm rushed during the day, that is my quiet time with him.
Wow. So it's Psalm 119. Is that a famous psalm?
It's a very famous tehillim. It's one of the longest. It has 156 pesukim. It has 8 pesukim per letter. And when we... Unlike Ashrei doesn't have a pasuk for Nun. This does. It has every single letter. And for the Befa, right? Yeah. And when we're davening for someone, we often pick the letters of their name. So we pick it from Kuf Yotet. We pick those paragraphs that have those letters. So it is a very special.
Right. And can you take us on a short tour of this room? Like, why is this Ozzy's room? What is this?
This was more his child room, not so much after bar mitzvah.
Right.
But it has his farm, and it has his tudah. Every time he memorized and learned, we learned all of Chumash, he learned all of Mishnayos. He did a Siyam HaShas by bar mitzvah, and he would actually memorize whole masechtas of Mishnayos.
Wow.
And it has some of his pictures, it has his fish. It has his Legos. He was very, very into Legos and into science. Like, he had all these science kits my husband got him.
Yeah.
These little science kits from a great company in America. That this actually, you build an Etch-a-Sketch.
Oh my gosh.
It's an Etch-a-Sketch. And so every month he would have these science kits and he would build, and then he would try to build them out of Legos or out of another. So another one we have is a water wheel, and he tried building it, a hydroelectric water pump, out of Legos and his drone batteries. And so he did lots of science projects. He would build towers 6 feet tall for kids out of wood blocks, out of Legos, and then invite them to come tear it apart.
Wow.
He did a lot. If kids, we had one game where you build like a maze for the ball, the soda balls to go down.
Yeah.
And he would start at the table and go all the way down, and little kids would have him say, you know, do it again, do it again, do it again. And he would, until he had to go learn, he would build towers and build mazes and take them for rides on the bimba.
Wow.
And so any age child, you know, he stopped playing when he was bar mitzvah on his own volition. But he would still play with any child who asked him.
Wow. It's remarkable. I want to just take a, this is the final thing, so we're finishing up. If people have questions, you can send in. So you told me that there's a bunch of things being done. Let's just say, first of all, I just think that Ozzy, I mean, it sounds to me like once in a generation. Like, it sounds to me like he was such, the things that I'm hearing, these are things that, I have a 14-year-old son, and like, I can't, like, this is just incredibly unusual. It's incredible. It's a loss for you, your family. It's a loss for all of Klal Yisrael.
Which to me, he was, you know, the first rabbi who came here, the first person who came here to Machanah us was Rabbi Feldman from Israel, who said that Ozzy was like a comet.
comet.
A comet flashing across the sky, and he gave a brilliant light, and we just have the residue of that light. Someone actually, a friend of ours, for Ozzy's birthday, made this beautiful poem about Ozzy and being a comet, and he was a model for us. He was a model of how to act in this world. And he was unusual, you know. He was a 13-year-old boy who never had to get up in the morning. And never got up from the table unless he said a bracha.
No.
But he also, you know, hit spiders and to scare people and called his, you know, teased his sisters and ran around the house and played on the trampoline and climbed mountains, you know. This Pesach, we did some crazy things. One of them was an extreme hike where you have to, you know, climb up and rappel down. And there was one point where you had to go around a rock, and I'm not young, and he just went around because he's this thin little thing, and a couple of the siblings, he would help around, and then it was my turn, I was terrified, and, you know, the tour guide said, you know, you can go down, you can just walk down and walk up, it's not that far, but it's a little mucky in there, and it's very far, and you might fall. But everyone else went around. So I said, I really have to go around. So I got up and I was frozen. I was absolutely frozen. And my son said, Mommy, just take one step and I'll raise you up. And I think you're 13. You weigh 12 pounds. You're not going to give me up.
It was exactly a month before.
Was a month before. And I was so scared. And I thought, you know, he said it four times. But he said it four times in the same tone of voice with the same smile. Mommy, if you take one step, I'll raise you up. And I said, okay, I can either stay here forever or I can trust. So I took one step and reached out my hand and he just pulled me up. And I feel like that's what we need to do. We need to take the one step and he's going to pull us up.
Yeah. It seems like that's what you're doing. You're taking, it's like what you have a mission, like the micro mitzvah with this foundation, ozzyfoundation.org.
Yeah, the foundation is to promote micro mitzvah across the spectrum of Yiddishkeit, across the world if we can, but mostly across the spectrum, and to teach anyone who has a neshama that you need to do something small. You need to get up and not think about it. You know, not spend hour, you know, people tell me, I'm thinking about doing something. No, what are you doing today? What are you doing right now? I'm not asking a lot. I'm saying smile at someone, call someone you haven't, a rabbi called me this morning, I said he called someone he hasn't spoken to in a long time.
Right.
Open the door for someone, pick up a piece of trash,
right.
Whatever it is, something really, really small. And so our foundation is hopefully going to create educational materials and disperse programs to improve mitos, improve people's ability and understanding of what it is to become better, and help them understand how to make it small.
Mm-hmm.
Our foundation also, and my son loved learning, and he loves Sfarim, so we're hoping to raise money to get Sfarim to schools who need it.
Like basic Sfarim.
Basic Sfarim, like Migros Gadolos and Shas and Mishnah Torah, things like that. Your basic Sfarim to yeshivas. And then books that teach Mitzvah development more to younger schools.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever educational materials a certain school needs, we're going to try to supply them for schools.
Yeah.
So that's a major push of our foundation.
And you also told me something very moving about his school. He was in a cheder called Ren, what they're doing there in his memory.
Well, it was very interesting that the rabbi came right when he found out my son was sick. It was very hard. And he came after Shabbos and said, I think it should be in our school, Levaya, which never occurred to me that that would be a reality.
Yeah.
It ended up being the most beautiful, beautiful Levaya, because that was his home. That was really, you know, and he lived here, he lived there. One of the places he went to was the Kotel a lot. And his sister's homes. That was it. That was his life.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole week after Shiva, the first day, my son-in-law and our rabbi upstairs went and spoke to the boys. They spoke to all the 4th to 8th grade to give the chizuk. And they put candles around my son's chair. And they sang, and they talked, and they wrote. And the whole week, they processed. He processed with all the upper grades, and they had actually a mitzvah contest, a micro mitzvah contest.
Oh.
where the boys were supposed to do 7 mechametzvahs a day.
Wow.
And get notes, and they gave out prizes. The toy stores knew my son, and the toy stores gave prizes.
Oh.
And, you know, friends of mine said, I have a 12-year-old boy who's asking me for mitzvah notes. And she said, I don't know what your son did, but my son's asking me for mitzvah notes. My youngest and my 7-year-old says he's going to take out the trash with a smile.
Wow.
And so a lot of friends calling me and saying that the boys are taking this very, very seriously.
Yeah.
There was another boy who, his mother lost a child a few years ago and also lost her husband in a Hanukkah massacre. And when he was becoming a bar mitzvah, he decided he wanted to do tefillin like my son. So his rabbi, I cannot say the name, Shalsevsky, I don't know, it's a wonderful Rosh Hashiva, I don't want to remember his name, said, come, you know, I'm going to don tefillin with you at Yeshiva. You're going to don tefillin with me. That's a big honor. And he told his mother, I don't know what to do. How can I don tefillin like Ozzy if the Rosh Hashiva wants me to do it at Yeshiva? So she spoke with the Rebbetzin, and the Rebbetzin said, I'll take care of this. And the rabbi called and said, okay, you're going to come to my home. And we're going to don tefillin at home, and then we're going to Yeshiva. Because my son donned tefillin at home. He did not talk ever when he was wearing his tefillin. He did not talk in shul. He did not talk in base medrash. When he was learning or davening, that's all he did. He would smile at you, but he only focused on davening or focused on learning.
So he would buy the tefillin at home?
Yeah.
And then he would go to school and do that?
To shul.
To shul to do that.
Yeah, once you're bar mitzvah, you did a little before bar mitzvah, you go to shul, and then he would come home, take them off, and then I could talk to him. So if I wanted to talk to him in the morning, I had to get up by 6. Because 6:20 he was putting on his tefillin, and it was too late.
Yeah, no, so Sue told me an incredible story that her downstairs neighbor is Rabbi David, Rabbi and Rebbetzin David. Rabbi David is the son-in-law, the only son-in-law of Rav Hutner. And so she had this story that she...
So I was told by the Rebbetzin that they didn't find out right away, because he was only going to find out maybe an hour and a half before Shabbos that he was nifter. And, you know, I tried my best to get word out, but at some point you can't tell everybody. And they didn't hear. And someone told him on Shabbos, and he walks to his yeshiva, Baka Yitzchak, down the street, and he just kept walking. And his students did not want to interrupt him. He's the Rosh Yeshiva. But around Asherad, they finally said, a Rav. And he was so lost in thought.
And he said that he would see him in the elevator in the morning.
And he wouldn't talk. And Rosh Hashiva would talk to him, even just in learning. And Ozzy would smile. And I mean, the Rebbetzin said he always took out her trash, and he would take in her groceries and open the door. And I never knew it, and it didn't surprise me. But he wouldn't tell me. He never came home and said, oh, I said hello to this person. I helped this person with sukkah. I helped this person with groceries. I never knew. I just knew afterwards that this is what he did.
Wow.
My husband tells a story that one of the fathers came and told him that when Ozzy was, when they were 7 or 8 years old, his son and Ozzy walked home together, and Ozzy didn't have to cross the street, so he could just walk home. But this boy lived across the street, and he said that at the corner across from this boy's street, he would wait with him, whether it was 5 minutes or half an hour, till someone could cross him. He would never leave him alone. He would just wait until this boy went across the street.
Wow. Oh, incredible. Okay. Thank you so much, Sue. Let's see.
No.
No questions. So thank you so much. I'm sure that everyone...
That everyone can just take on a micro mitzvah, not only for my son, but for all the Gedoshim that... You must know Rabbi Meir Leon came over one day during Shabbat.
The mayor of Jerusalem, Moshe Leon.
And he said, I know exactly what you're going to say. He went to me, back to my husband. He said, I know exactly what you're going to say, because I've heard it in every single house. So you see the power that my son had, and the MS, and the midos, and the joy. That was not unusual in this group.
Wow.
This entire group, every house we go to, there's pure fame in these families. Every house we go to, we hear about the amazing mitzvahs and the amazing acts that these men and boys did. And there's actually another boy in America who did a cheshbon. And he's a little bit older, but I don't know when he started. And
oh, a boy among the Kedoshim.
Yes. And all the Kedoshim were hearing about that they were all special, that they were all very much Adam Gadol, all of each of them.
Wow.
It wasn't just my son.
Wow.
So he's in Yeshiva Shalmala.
Wow.
You know, he was getting ready for Yeshiva. And, you know, in eighth grade, you get ready for Yeshiva, and it's a big question, where are you going to go? Where are you going to go?
Yeah.
And we asked him, where do you want to go?
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, wherever you think and the rabbi thinks.
Wow.
Okay, so we met with his rabbi. They gave us a couple of choices. And the rabbi would come to the school and kind of interview the boys a little, like, you know, to have the whole class. And he would tell us what he thought. And he was very afraid of Machlokas.
Mm-hmm.
Very afraid.
As he was.
And, you know, boys told us that in class, if there was Machlokas, he would walk away.
Wow.
So, you know, if the boys were doing a Majora for Lag BaOmer, the whole class, he never did it. Because the first day, there would be Machlokas, he would just come home and say, I'll do it with a friend.
As I say to the people who don't know in Harnoth, then all along the Jerusalem forest, they build the boys build these gigantic, gigantic bonfires, and they're building them for weeks before. These, like, there must be, like, I don't know, 3 stories tall, like, gigantic. So that,
yeah.
So we're talking about these bonfires.
So as he would build it, unless, you know, there was no Machlokas, so you just build a bonfire. They say that, you know, my husband heard the story of a few weeks before his nature, there was a big rav was speaking in a shul, and as he came home to me, he said, Mommy, I know it's a little late, but can I go to shul to get his rav?
Mm-hmm.
I said, it is. That's pretty late. You're going to get up in the morning? You're going to get up. I said, is it really important to you? It's really important. Okay, go. What I didn't know was that his entire class was waiting downstairs, because if he went, everyone was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And if he didn't go, no one was going to go.
Yeah.
Because he would only do things with the entire class. Yeah. So if someone would tell him, oh, a bunch of us are doing this, he would say, is the whole class invited? If they weren't invited, then he would take part. So he, you know, the boys also tell us that he ran from Lashon Hara, and if there were boys in the classroom speaking Lashon Hara, he would just walk away.
Wow.
And so, you know, at Leviah, all the boys surrounded him, and the Rav said, you need to ask Achila. And his boys were very sad and crying a lot, but they said, you know, no one has Machlokas with this boy, because he never engaged in Machlokas.
Yeah.
A friend in the building sends her kids to the same school. And one day she was in the elevator with him, and she said, recently, very recently, and she said, my boys don't know what to do if there's, you know, if there's fighting, the boys fight. And he said, you know, what are you doing? And he said, don't get involved. And she's like, is it that easy? He said, yeah, it's that easy. Don't get involved. One boy. So that was his way of completely avoiding my focus and watching that. Don't get involved.
So I just want to ask you, like, one last question. Like, so you said, like, it's over and over again that things are falling, and all these tragedy after tragedy, and all these holy people, you know, and there's Ad Hashem, we should see miracles in Surfside. But, like, all these people, these very devout, incredible people, are the people who are being taken in these tragedies, you said, every 2 weeks. What is Hashem trying to tell us? Like, it's these terrible...
I don't know. I mean, all I can say is that I think we need to get up and do, and we need to show respect. And we need to show respect for every single yid and every person that we come in contact with.
Mm-hmm.
We can't stay in our own cocoons anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We can't stay in our own neighborhoods, in our own buildings. We need to reach out to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the first base of Beitash fell because of Sinas Kinnan. And I think that we still haven't learned that lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, there's so many, after the Bibbon of Harnoff, there was so much chesed that came out of it. There was a Chabura system, which I am so grateful for. It's where I have so many friends. And but there
started
were big
started by Rebetzin S.T. Yarmish,
yes.
Right?
S.T. Yarmish starts everything in Harnoff. And, you know, there were huge things of chesed, huge. And when Corona came, and we were stuck in our homes, there were huge amounts of chesed. And I know I shopped for so many people. And people were helping in any way they could. And you thought, for sure, she is coming. But it wasn't enough. And I think that the trick is everyone needs to take on something. Everyone is taking on something very, very small.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing we can point to.
Mm-hmm.
I saw my son, who had really had perfected every mitzvah. He really had accomplished so much in his life. He finished a Masechta Brachos with a chavrusa on his own after school in Gemara.
Mm-hmm.
On Purim. But he did a little bit every day. He just did a little bit every day. He never gave up.
Yeah.
And, you know, he would play with kids on Shabbos, until it was time to learn. It was like, this is what I'm supposed to do now.
Yeah.
This is where Hashem is putting me in.
Yeah.
Without rushing, and always with a smile.
Yeah.
And if we can just take on part of that, take on the smile, take on the not rushing, you know, it occurred to me, I was speaking like a seminary, that on Shabbos, we're very relaxed.
Yeah.
And we have quiet meals, and we bench together, and we sing, and we give Divrei Torah, and we're very relaxed. Why? Because we know Hashem's right in the world.
Yeah.
So, what happens the other 6 days? Do we think Hashem goes on vacation? Why are we so rushed? Why aren't we saying, Hashem put me here?
Yeah.
And it's very hard. I know today was my son's birthday, and I was very, very emotional, and I was not always able to be so calm. It's very hard to do. But even if once a day, we can just say, this is the situation I'm in. What am I doing? And why am I rushed? And why am I so worried about it?
Right.
You know, a couple weeks ago, I went to America, and I got to the airport when I thought was plenty of time, and there were so many stomach blocks in front of me, and it took forever to get to the airport. All the counters were closed that I was trying to go to. I got up there an hour in advance. I said, we're closed. And I offered to not take my suitcase. I offered everything. I wasn't going on that plane. And I said, you know, okay, I'm not going on the plane. Hashem doesn't want me on that plane. And, I, you know, my son was called, what can we do? What can we do? They're so beautiful. I said, don't worry. And I realized Hashem has something else for me to do tonight. And I went home and I had a beautiful night with my daughters. And I realized I was supposed to spend the night with my kids.
Mm-hmm.
I was out with my daughters and I went with, to the airport with my son. And I felt so good that I did what I was supposed to do. As he wasn't going to rush, why am I rushing? I'm supposed to get somewhere, I'll get there. I mean, I have to do my Shabbos. But we have to know either Hashem runs the world or he doesn't. So when my son was nifter, we as a family sat down and said, really, there's a clear definition. Either we believe Hashem runs the world, or we don't. And if Hashem runs the world, then he took my son for a reason. My son was done. My son completed his life. And my son was taken after saying Ani Mani and Shema and Vidui on Lagba Omer by Rashbi. That's where my son was. As my father said, he was where he wanted to be, doing what he wanted to be doing. And I have to accept that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I accept that Hashem runs the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I have to look, we have to look at our own lives each day and say, what can, you know, people say to me, I don't know what to take on. I said, I'll give you 5 options, and one of them is going to be good for you.
Yeah.
So take that on. And you know what? You take on a small thing and you do it for 4 or 5 days and it doesn't work, change. You know, have a big goal. I want to be a positive person. Great. What are you doing today?
Yeah. I want to tell you the micro mitzvah that I took on after my run. So I decided that it has to, that, so I was hearing a lot of people talking about how we had to like work in terms of Jewish unity, and you're talking about. And so I decided that I have like a Yetzer Hara, that if I see someone who's like, let's say to the right of me religiously, or someone to the left of me religiously, or someone who's, you know, whatever, then I have a little bit, I have a judgmental voice, like, oh yeah, like it's 100 degrees out, do you really have to be wearing, like, you know, like 2 centimeter thick stocking, like I have like a voice, like, okay, beat someone up, you gotta do that, like, or like someone on the other side, like, well, maybe put on some clothing, or whatever. And so what I do, and so since my run, I've been trying, and when I walk down the street, and I see someone, and I hear that voice, is I try to think something positive about them. That woman in the 2 centimeter thick stockings, she's really standing up for like the world is like so many people are like you know completely the world is so not immodest and so much immodesty, and that this woman's like she's holding down the fort for modesty, you know. Yeah, so that's, and I still do it even today. I bought something on the way to pick up my son in kindergarten, and I did it again. I found myself doing that again. So
you're still aware. You're still sensitive.
Yeah. Thanks.
And
to
that voice is going to get quieter and quieter.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's doing it small every day.
Yeah. That micro mitzvah. Yeah.
Being with kavana and with joy.
Yeah. So thank you so much, Sue. Thank you so much for being with us. You are such an honor. I just want to say something else. Like, right after the Shiva, it was, I'm sorry, during the Shiva, I could not believe that, you know, I was listening nonstop to Torah, to classes on Torah anytime, trying to get physic here and there. And the person who gave me the most physic was you, who had just lost your son. You sent out a piece that you had received about what's happening in Shemayim with all the Kadoshim. And I thought, who is this
one?
That's Rebecca Straker. So who is this woman who is inspiring everybody? Like, she just lost her son how many days ago? And she's already sending out chizik, which ended up being to the whole world. You thought you were just sending out to the Har Nochlet. It ended up being to the entire Jewish world. And now again, now still, like in your, this is so painful. Grieving so much. Today was Ozzy's birthday, and you're fighting on. You have your mission. You're doing what you can to like bring light out of this such a.
My son was light, and I know during Shiva, you know, we thought 5-10 people would come at a time, and the door opened, and it was hundreds of people.
Wow.
We said this isn't normal.
Wow.
So I sat down and I held my daughter's hands.
Yeah.
The whole time, all 7 days.
Yeah.
And I just felt like my son was talking through me, and I think my husband felt the same way, and my kids felt the same way, that Ozzy had given us a new job.
Yeah.
And it was our choice to take it or not take it, and we could sit and grieve and just cry, and that's beautiful and normal, or we can make an impression, and we could share who our son was, and the model of Yiddishkeit that he presented,
mm-hmm.
and the model that he had, the light he brought into our home, and the level that he brought us to. And you know, you can name any Mita and I can give you a story. And it inspires me every day. I can just think, what would he do in this situation?
Yeah.
Because he was very complete and very pure. He didn't have a lot of shtus around him.
Yeah.
And if I can be a part of helping Klal Yisrael get one step closer to Geula, then that's what we have to do.
Yeah.
I think my husband and my kids are for the same feeling. So we're working together.
So thank you so much, and thank you to all of you who joined us. We'll hear from now on, no more falling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So much
good news.